Welcome back to another episode of the BisonReport.com radio podcast. I am your host, Ryan Burns, and joining me, as always, is co-host Ross Uglum. Ross, what a way to start the season on national television. I'll tell you what, from someone who watched it from a truck stop as his car broke down on the way to Fargo, how did it look in person? Because it looked pretty damn good on TV.
It was incredible. I spent the first half down on the field. That was kind of our game plan, was to have me on the field, maybe take some pictures and get a feel like ground level and have you up in the box. Obviously, our two-man crew turned into a one-man crew on account of your technical difficulties, and then was able to go up in the box for the second half and kind of observe NDSU's comeback from the bird's eye view there.
Absolutely. So technical difficulties / car breakdowns on 94 are really fun to deal with, but that's not why you're listening to the podcast. So, Ross, let's start with Coach Klieman's press conference today. Obviously, you were there asking questions, learning, and gleaning anything you can. What did you learn after today's press conference?
Well, I think the first, he talked to about the offense for about 30 seconds, talked about the defense for 30 more seconds, and then decided that he didn't really want to be asked any Nick DeLuca questions, so he just said, guys, Nick separated his shoulder, we put it back into place, they weren't going to let us play him, so they put ice on it, he's going to take the week off of practice, and then they're going to try and have him practice a week from today, and if he gets a full weekend, obviously, of practice, they're going to let him play against Eastern Washington. If he doesn't make the Eastern Washington game, I'd be pretty darn shocked if he didn't make the Iowa game. I don't think there's really any threat of him missing the Iowa game at this point. I have pretty confident feelings as well about him being able to play against Eastern Washington. A couple other things that I took away, he was asked who, Matt Plank's backup would be. Matt Plank is the kid that came in for DeLuca, ended up towards the end of the game sort of favoring his right arm, looked like he might have got a stinger. That was x-ray, came back negative. Sounds like Dan Marlette might be in the mix there, but at the same time, Chris Board might come in the outside, and Stumpf or Pierre G. Tucker would potentially play inside linebacker. But again, with DeLuca having a strong prognosis, it sure sounds like he's going to be fine, and we don't really need to worry who the third-string middle linebacker is. Other than that, King Frazier had a little bit of an ankle sprain. That'll be dealt with. Not much else to take away news-wise. Strategy, we just talked a little bit about the nickel package that they'll have to use against Eastern Washington. Eric Bachmeier, still probably going to be that guy. Going to play some free safety while Robbie Grimsley comes down and plays slot corner. Klieman had some nice things to say about Matt Plank. Other than that, though, nothing too revelatory from CK's press conference. It was all pretty informative. He was pleased with the way that the team was able to pull out a victory and just said nice things about the FCS kickoff game and at the same time that he's pretty pleased to not be a part of it next year. So with all that said, it's time for a possibly brief session of everyone's favorite inside information, and that is recruiting time with Ryan Burns. Ryan, what do you have for us on the football and men's basketball side?
Well, let's start with the football game. Obviously, on national television, NDSU brought in a host of visitors, starting with a lot of their different commits. There was linebacker commit Jack Begley from Omaha, Noah Gindorf, tight end commit from Crosby, NDSU's highest-rated commit in Noah Gindorf, Nash Jensen from Osseo, an offensive lineman that's going to be playing guard, 6'3", 350 pounds. Logan McCormick, a defensive end from Wisconsin. He's committed to NDSU as a defensive end. Tanner Sunt, a defensive lineman from Farmington, Minnesota, a longtime commit. Lane Tucker actually made the way all the way from Gillette, Wyoming, up to Fargo for the game. So that was pretty cool to see. Zach Willis, from the longest drive to the shortest drive, so from West Fargo to Gillette. So Zach Willis, a offensive line commit from West Fargo, walk-on commit Brandon Metz, and then a couple of interesting targets to talk about are Sterling Smith, who is a tight end that Ross and I got to see at NDSU's camp and in June, someone that I was impressed by physically is, you don't see a lot of guys like Sterling Smith running around. He's 6'3", 215 pounds. Someone who I think could be a flex tight end of sorts, someone that has no issue going against anybody on the board drill, anything like that. And then Gavin Blomberg. He's one of the interesting linemen to follow here in Minnesota. He plays at Providence Academy, same high school as Henry Van Dellen, the quarterback commit from last season. So from the left tackle for Henry Van Dellen to, you know, it's just someone that it's very intriguing to see NDSU take a look at. Gavin's a kid who I believe has a couple of Ivy League offers plus a South Dakota offer. So I don't anticipate NDSU really taking another lineman at this stage, but if something were to happen, they know that a guy like Gavin is there waiting for them. And then a 2018 offensive lineman from Minot by the name of Logan Kruger. He was the only 2018 of note at the game. So they had a host of visitors. As if you're following the game on social media and following the Bison Report on Twitter, you saw that a couple of the commits tweeted out a picture of everybody together. So pretty cool looking group there. And then on the basketball side of things, there's actually been a lot going on. Since we last spoke, NDSU picked up commit from Rocky Cruiser, someone that Ross was fortunate enough to be able to get an interview with that will be playing here shortly. But Rocky's a kid here from the cities. He's from Totino Grace. He played with the Minnesota Fury. He's someone that I know a couple of the assistant coaches had a very hard stance on, it that they wanted Rocky and they wanted to make sure that NDSU was able to take him. But the deal is that Rocky is a 5-for-4 kid where he has to walk on his freshman year, and then for the final 4 years of his time at NDSU, he'll be put on scholarship. And from talking with Rocky today, he's not exactly keen on having to walk on, but he knows that NDSU is a great place. His sister goes there and is in the pharmacy school. He's excited to join her there. Family is very excited. Rocky's a kid who had other offers from Winona State, Upper Iowa. You know, someone that was really having a great summer, and that's someone that Coach Richmond wanted to make sure that he got into the fold there. And then obviously there was another official visitor, or there wasn't a NDSU's first official visitor of the 2016 basketball, you know, of the 2017 group there, and Reggie Scurry, someone who is a junior college player from Northern Oklahoma, someone that has a full ride offer, obviously from NDSU, and he's someone that I know that Coach Richmond and staff have really made a priority. They went and saw him many different times during the spring, and Reggie, from talking with him, has NDSU number one at this point. Reggie's a 6'7", springy, athletic type of forward, but he also wants to make sure he takes some other official visits, and he's got official visits set to Arkansas Little Rock for the 16th of September and Missouri State for the 9th of September. He might be also taking one to Middle Tennessee, but he's unsure of that at this point. But, you know, Reggie's someone who is very honest with me, said NDSU is the number one school on my list. They have been. They blew me away on the visit, and I just want to make sure I have something to compare to. So if any NDSU is able to take three bigs in Reggie, Jordan, and Rocky, I think they'd be pretty happy with that, Ross.
I definitely agree. I think that, you know, they've been playing this four around one for quite some time, and that's fine. But I think, you know, the coaching staff and specifically Richmond will probably like a little bit more size and at least the versatility to play conventional basketball or play a little bit bigger inside. Not that, you know, Reggie at 6'7" is all that big, but Rocky being 6'9" and Meidinger, you know, as the legend grows, might be 7'3" by the time he gets to Fargo. So it's certainly something to look at. But I did have a chance to chat with Rocky for 5 or 6 minutes and talk about his commitment. He was a very well spoken kid, and I'm excited to share that with you guys right now.
I'm here with the not the newest member, but the newest commitment to Dave Richmond's NDSU men's basketball program, Rocky Cruiser. Did I say that right, Rocky?
Yeah, that's correct.
Okay, so Rocky Cruiser of Totino Grace High School in Minnesota. And Rocky, I guess let's start kind of from the beginning. When did NDSU first express interest about you playing in Fargo?
Probably after I went to their big man camp, about 3 weeks prior to getting the offer.
Okay. And you said big man camp, and I kind of want to talk about that for just a second. if you Google Rocky Cruiser, you might find yourself listed at 6'5", some places 6'7". You're 6'9 now. When did you hit your big growth spurt? And is there any chance that you're still growing, or does it seem like 6'9 is going to be where it stands?
I don't think it's been really one growth spurt. Freshman year, I was about 6'1", and I guess it's just been gradually increasing since then. I'm not too sure if I'm done growing. Maybe a couple more inches, one or two more inches, but it might stay around 6'9". So
when you were 6'1", did you play guard?
I was more of a 3 or 4, but obviously since I've kept growing, I've moved down to a 4 or 5.
Right. So what are your current connections to NDSU? I mean, do you know anybody on the team, or are you tight with anyone on the staff? How did that kind of all get started?
Well, don't really know anyone on the coaching staff or prior to this. My head basketball coach is Rob Ware, and he used to coach a kid named Seth Kawada on the NDSU team. He's going to be a freshman next year. And then my sister goes to NDSU, so those are the two connections that I had.
Okay, sure. What other schools recruited you, showed interest in you, etc.?
Just NSIC schools, so the University of Sioux Falls, Upper Iowa University, Winona State University, and Hillsdale College were my other offers before this.
Okay, so where do you and kind of where does the staff see you fitting in as far as, you know, redshirting, not redshirting, playing the 4, playing the 5? What have those conversations kind of entailed?
So the first year I'm going to redshirt. That's been the plan for the entire recruiting process. And then we haven't really talked too much where I'd be playing. Just a little bit that I've talked with Coach Richmond about it. I think he sees me playing the 4 or the 5. Either way is all right with me.
And what have your impressions been of Coach Richmond and any of the staff members, including the new guys that you've met?
Yeah, it's definitely family-oriented. Everyone from the players to the coaches. The coaches really balance each other really well. Everyone has their different aspects of their coaching style that I saw. I was up there watching a practice. Some of them are more intense, some of them are more fun-loving and exciting, but they definitely balance each other really well.
So what, kind of describe your visit to NDSU, which was pretty recent, and then what about that visit sealed the deal for you? Because if I'm not mistaken, you committed when you were up there, right?
Yeah, that's correct. So when we went up there, we went, met with Coach. So I went and saw my sister first, and then went and sat in on one of her classes for about 30 minutes, and then met with Coach for lunch. Took a little tour, again, of the facilities. Then I watched a highlight video. And watched a big man workout. And we walked up to Coach's office and started talking. So I pretty much made my decision a couple days before. I was just going up to campus to make sure there were no really red flags that really would wave me away from NDSU, but everything seemed pretty perfect, so made a decision.
And is it tougher, or I don't know if even the word is annoying, but just taking that the 4 scholarships in 5 years, or is that something that you've kind of become okay with, something that is going to work out for you and your family?
Yeah. It was obviously a blessing to receive a scholarship at D1 school. It's definitely different than getting a full ride, but it's not a game changer, really. With financial aid and scholarship money from academics, it does not really make a difference, in my opinion, from what it could have been a full ride.
Sure. So do you consider now your recruitment completely closed?
Yeah, I do, really. I really feel like NDSU could be a home for me for the next 5 years.
Well, Rocky, thanks so much for your time. Do you have anything, any last thing you'd like to say to Bison fans or maybe excited about having you in the program?
Nothing really. Just I'm really excited to get up there and become part of the Bison family.
All right, Rocky. Thanks again.
Yeah, awesome. Thank you.
And Rocky, we'd like to thank you again for providing us your time and coming on the show. Ryan, let's go back to the Charleston Southern versus NDSU FCS kickoff recap.
Yeah, let's break things down here. Starting with, I have to know what you thought of the atmosphere. Again, I wasn't able to get there in time, and from talking with the recruits, they said it was electric, amazing, best thing they've ever seen. What was your thoughts on the opening night game? Just, you know, everything going into it, the new video boards, all things considered, what did you think of the atmosphere?
Well, I mean, it's definitely a dichotomy between myself and you. You know, I've been going to games since they opened up the Fargo Dome, and so you get used to some of that stuff, but this was definitely different. Obviously, you know, new video boards, the HD boards were incredible. I think that they really bring a modern spin to a Fargo Dome facility that's pretty basic. I mean, it's a four-sided dome with two symmetrical sides of seats. Everything sort of looks the same. The outside of the building isn't super attractive or different. And so getting inside and seeing those boards were really impressive. And even just the crowd being able to see plays that were under review, things like that in HD, watching you know, guys trying to get their feet in balance, watching that last touchdown by King, seeing that it really was a touchdown, et cetera, et cetera. And then that new intro was incredible. The way that they, you know, implemented everything with Thunderstruck, I got a kick out of, you know, some people were saying, well, the storm warning thing was a ripoff from Iowa State. I'm guessing NDSU's athletic department didn't even realize it. There's so many universities across this country that, you know, do video. I mean, everybody has a video intro, and you're bound to overlap at some point. But really, really was cool. I can understand why it would have been so impressive to a recruit. No question about it. And then the thing that Kleiman mentioned in his press conference today, which was really tough for all of us, especially those who have been close to the program and those who've been involved in the media, and that was the Scott Miller tribute. His signature "my oh my" call is something that will forever be a part of Bison Athletics. His voice was so recognizable and so synonymous with the athletic program, both men's basketball and of course football. And like CK said on his Monday press conference before the game, everybody kind of misses their friend. Everybody misses Scott. He was such a nice person and such a professional that was sort of hard to watch, but really cool for everybody to get to remember Scotty in that way, and certainly an impressive video package. And I retweeted that just actually a couple of minutes ago. They've shared the tribute package on YouTube, so fans that were not able to see the game that still want to hear Scotty's voice one more time or see some of his more famous calls, you'll be able to see that. But I do have one complaint. I think it was shared by a few different people. There used to be boards on the east and west, the sideline, the long way. There used to be boards that kept track of two different sets of statistics. One board had, I think, sacks, tackles for loss, and turnovers, and the other board had passing yards, rushing yards, and total yards. And right now I'm not sure they have their scoreboard configuration or their video board configuration 100% figured out. I had a hard time keeping track of sort of numerous statistics, and part of that I think is maybe not as important now with the Fargo Dome having you know, Wi-Fi and with us being up in the box. But when I was down on field level, it was really convenient to be able to look up and kind of keep track how everything was going on those boards. So I do miss those, but I do understand why they're taken down. They were very old, both stylistically and in just the way that they were utilized. And with eight new video boards and $7 million worth of HDTV, I understand why the old boards were taken down. It just was kind of sad to see them go.
I hear you. So let's get into the actual game review itself. And I want to start by talking about the offense. basically a pretty slow start offensively. I don't think you can put it any other way. First five drives of the game for the Bison, punt, punt, miss field goal, fumble, and punt. Not the way we were predicting things on the preview podcast. What did you think of the slow start? Were you anticipating it, or what were your thoughts from seeing that on field level?
Certainly not anticipating it. I was getting texts from friends. Hey, when was the last time we were shut out in the first half? And that Cam Peterson field goal doinked off the crossbar and through, and they of course weren't shut out in the first half. But I mean, up until the clock read zeros, they were. I think that I really underestimated that Charleston Southern defense. I know they ended last season by giving up 58 points to a Jacksonville State team that didn't impress me that much, but that was a Jacksonville State team that had to deal with a Bison offense that was in playoff form, and those are really tough to deal with, obviously. I think if you look at the average offensive output during the playoffs for NDSU, it's pretty substantial, especially considering that NDSU team was welcoming back a very, very hyped-up Carson Wentz. So maybe I was, either overselling NDSU's offense, underselling Charleston's defense, I don't know, but they're getting pushed around a little bit, especially on the offensive line, and I think what really got them into trouble was the A-gap power not working. The Bison had to go shotgun quite a bit, and the schedule just got off, and that's how NDSU runs things. They like to be in second and six. They like to be in third and short. That's the schedule that they stay on, and when they get into second and nine, they get into second and eight, they get off schedule, it becomes a much more difficult offense to run. There's no question about it, because you have to dial up those passing plays. And the way that Charleston Southern was utilizing those big defensive linemen, they only used three of them, but they were crashing a lot and slanting a lot, and they were occupying two blockers a lot. And when you do that, you free up linebackers to make one-on-one plays against running backs in traffic, and they were certainly able to do that. And I thought it was a pretty impressive game plan, and I really felt like Charleston Southern was a well-coached group. And Kleiman mentioned that multiple times today during his press conference, that Charleston Southern was a well-coached group.
Here, I talked about how Cam missed a field goal early, but then he had that one to end the first half, hits the crossbar, bounces over. Pretty cool to see there. And then another facet of the game where I don't think that he nearly got as much credit was on the kickoffs. So what did you think of Cam's performance in the first game of the season here?
Well, he was a player that people were concerned about, even media members, during Kleiman's opening press conference, not the week one, but the actual media day press conference, were asking about Cam. And I don't think that was really even much of a question. It was certainly less of a question than I think the general public understood it to be. Peterson had a decent year, really struggled over the last two games, and then in the early part of the playoffs, but kicked well in the national championship game. And that's just things that happen with a true freshman. He kicked off well, I think, on Saturday, and his three field goal attempts were fine. The 38 or 36 yarder that he missed, Cole Davis and James Fisher completely screwed up that snap exchange, and I don't even think the ball was at the proper angle. I'm not even sure the laces were out on that 38 yarder or 36 yarder, however long it was. Made a 52 yarder. All the extra points were clean. The kickoffs were fine. I think Cam Peterson's going to be just fine, and somebody that is certainly a specialist that people don't have to worry about going forward, which is important.
Now, unfortunately, we have to be a bit negative here, but I mean, there's no other way to put it. Jackson Koontz was not good. That was not what we were expecting coming into the first game, going from Ben LeCompte, who obviously was one of the best punters in Bison football history, to Jackson Koontz. And again, trying to follow in that kind of a footsteps isn't always the easiest thing in the world, but six punts, an average of 32 yards a punt, and zero inside the 20. I mean, Ross, that's frankly, it's unacceptable.
Yeah, it was really a struggle, and Kleiman didn't really pull any punches at the press conference today either. I think, part of it obviously has to do with the expectations of an NDSU punter, how good NDSU has been at that position over the last decade, but this was extremely problematic. He did not kick the ball well at all. Didn't kick it particularly high, didn't kick it particularly long. Really just was a problem all game long. Could not flip the field and just looked rattled out there. You could see, even last year when he lost his job at SMU, you could really see that average go down. And this was a guy who set an SMU record or was very close to it for total punting yardage as a freshman, averaging over 40 yards per kick. He was way down in the 30s here, and they just were unimpressive punts. They looked like rugby punts, except they came off of, you know, normal kicks. They were not supposed to be rolling kicks. These were the old exaggerated two-step kicks that, you know, any punter would normally go through. And he's on notice. Kleiman answered my question, which I really was not convinced was going to happen. I said, who's the competition for Jackson Kuntz? And part of me sort of expected the head coach to say, look, it's one game. I don't know what you guys are overreacting about, et cetera, et cetera. And he said, we'll look at Garrett Wagner and we'll look at Cam Peterson straight up. So I think Jackson Kuntz is maybe a little bit on notice. At the same time, you know, he made a commitment to the university and the university made a commitment to him to finish out his education here. And I think they're going to give him a longer leash than one nationally televised game.
Let's talk a little bit more about the offense, and specifically Darius Shepherd. Leads the team in receptions, leads the team in total yards, and has a touchdown. What did you think about the way he started off his season?
Wow. That's what I think is wow. Such an impressive player. You know, we fell in love with him a little bit last season, especially after that catch in the corner of the end zone against Northern Iowa. Started calling him Legendarius, tried to get that trademark approved. Still waiting to hear back on that, of course. But he made a significant jump from year one to year two. Fingers crossed, I'm going to get a chance to actually sit down and talk to Darius this week. We're going to hope that the sports information department lets me do that. But he was so impressive. And Mack Brown, if you went back and watched the ESPN production or watch the replay, was just gushing about this kid and thought he was ready to be a star, and I really think that as well. It's funny, too, because everything goes back to recruiting, especially when I'm talking to you, and this was a guy, there was a kid by the name of Isaiah Legere, who I think either plays for or doesn't play for anymore, Western Illinois, was committed to NDSU, decided to decommit, went to Western Illinois. Western's head coach obviously now has left, but they panicked and they got Darius Shepherd to flip from the University of South Dakota to NDSU a few days before signing day, and the kid's been just an absolute revelation. And this is, you know, he's a third year sophomore, 5'11", but he plays the ball in the air like Steve Smith of the Baltimore Ravens, and that makes him play like he's 6'2". So when we're talking about, man, the Bison always, recruit these 5'10", 5'11 receivers, they don't have an outside threat. When you high point the football like Darius Shepherd high points the football, you're an outside threat. Not only that, but they run him on jet action 10 to 12 times a game. This guy's an absolute playmaker, and I think he's going to end up being, by the end of the season, A, star, and B, one of the most important cogs in the offense. I was blown away by the jump that he's made since last year.
Speaking of impressive play, I thought that Matt Plank did a pretty dang good job. All things considering, Nick DeLuca goes out. He's one of the guys that really has to step into a much bigger role. What do you think of Matt Plank's play against Charleston Southern?
It's certainly a stark difference watching the game. I think he gives up 3 inches and 25 pounds to DeLuca. So not having that force in the middle was different. But, you know, the Bison have had smaller inside linebackers before. Grant Olson, Joe Mays come to mind, certainly. But Matt Plank's a guy that completely understands the communication of the Bison defense and understands how to get MJ and Pierre in the right spots, understands how to communicate with the safeties, and is a willing and capable tackler. I think he's a, you know, more than capable backup inside. He's a fourth-year junior, a guy that completely understands the program, and I don't think NDSU could be in a better spot at backup inside linebacker. Obviously, you know, you have a guy like Nick DeLuca, who is a potential FCS Defensive Player of the Year, and you don't want to be without him. But I think that the 2017 Bison look like they're in good shape with Matt Plank at middle linebacker, and the 2016 Bison look like they again have a special team star and a guy that can come in and spell DeLuca if the total play count gets up or if that shoulder acts up, you know, at points across the rest of the year. I would not even be too upset if the Bison wanted to keep DeLuca on a snap count. They wanted to play him 40 or 45 plays against Eastern Washington, and if they wanted to let Plank get the other 20 plays, that's something I'd be okay with. I'm not sure it's something that's going to matter. They're going to be in sub quite a bit. They might just use Stumpf and Pierre G. Tucker as the sub linebackers and give DeLuca more of a break. But at the same time, I think Matt Plank really played well, and that bodes well for the future of Bison football.
I can't even take this next phrase because you trademarked it today in your upon film room piece, but the Jalens really did impress. I mean, you look at what they did at the cornerback position, four tackles each, Jalen Allison with an interception and a pass breakup, and Jalen Wimbush with three passes broken up. What did you think of their play here in the first game of the season?
Well, it's funny you say that because I was obviously at Kleiman's press conference today, and I almost asked him what he thought of the Jalens, and I just said Jalen and Jalen because I didn't want to get scolded and I didn't want to make him laugh during his press conference. But I said, what did you think of Jalen and Jalen at cornerback? And he was impressed. And I think, you know, two guys, Jalen Allison, we talked about, is a player that played outside nickel, which basically means that he came in last year in sub. They slid Champion inside and played Jalen outside, and because of that, he had the most outside corner snaps by far of this young group, and he was the number one corner. And this game they played field and boundary, so whatever hash or side that the ball was on, with less field to play with, that was where Wimbush played, and then with more room to cover, that was where Allison played. So it's pretty clear that Allison's the number one corner. Wouldn't be shocked at all, and we'll talk about this in the Eastern Washington preview, but I wouldn't be shocked at all if he follows Cooper Kupp around. But Jalen Wimbush had a lot to learn and got into some bad technique stuff, some back shoulder stuff that was able to be converted against him. But at the same time, this is a guy who was a safety, and you normally put your better athletes at corner and not at safety. So the fact that he held up athletically, and I didn't really see any limitations there, that got me excited for the rest of the season. And I think he's a player that got a huge confidence boost from basically ending the game, not only avoiding offensive pass interference because he was being drugged down, but not counting on that flag to come and still being able to punch that ball away and end the game and win the game for the Bison in overtime. I was very impressed with both of the Jalens, and I think that the fact that they did have those warts makes me believe that they can be really good players by the end of the season, because you can bet that Coach Kleiman, who, don't ever forget, is a defensive backs coach, and Coach Klannerman can get that cleaned up.
I know another talking point that you want to talk about a little bit here is how much shotgun NDSU used, and I was a little bit surprised about that myself. I know you have a theory to why the Bison were able to do so much of it, but what were your thoughts on the amount of shotgun you saw against Charleston Southern?
Just so surprised. I couldn't believe that they went so shotgun heavy, but then I understood it. I mean, that A-gap power just wasn't working. Pulling a guard wasn't working. They decided to spill everything, and that, in layman's terms, mean they were cutting the pulling guard constantly, diving at knees, making sure that inside run was not available to NDSU. And the Bison have struggled with three-man fronts since the beginning of time. And it's something I barely even feel comfortable saying out loud because I don't want to give anybody any ideas, but it's a fact of life. If you go back over the course of the last 10 years, I'd love to chart their average against four-man fronts compared to their average against three-man fronts. It's just difficult for a power pull scheme to make things work against these 30 fronts, and they were cutting down the guards. So NDSU said, to hell with it then. We'll will go to the outside. And the most effective way for NDSU to go to the outside is that shotgun perimeter game. And those are pop passes to Demetri Williams. Now, Demetri Williams can't fumble the football, but pop passes to Demetri Williams, jet actions to Lance Dunn, jet actions to Darius Shepard, rollout stuff to Bruce Anderson, which he has to catch. But just these perimeter-oriented things that NDSU does work best out of the shotgun. I'm not saying that you can't run the jet sweep action out of under center, because they have and they will continue to do that. But the way that they do it out of the shotgun is easier. And at this point in his career, it actually really seems like Easton Stick is maybe a little bit more comfortable in the shotgun. Does that mean that against Eastern Washington and their notoriously putrid defense, NDSU's not going to line up in 22 personnel and jam it down their throat? No, it probably doesn't mean that. But it was just interesting to see Polisek so willing to open up the offense once Plan A proved to be a problem, because people were mad at Polisek after this game, but they'd have been a lot more angry if he would have tried to continue with that A-gap power.
All right, the final thing I want to really touch on here before we call it quits for the week is that finish. That was so much fun to watch. Again, I unfortunately missed the first overtime game in the history of the Fargo Dome that I'm barely bitter about, but you have Easton Stick leading the team down the field. Unfortunately, he gets picked off there on the fourth down, and then they miss a long field goal, sends it into overtime. King Frazier, first play from scrimmage, takes it to the house, and here we are. No, but what was it like there for that thrilling finish?
Just unbelievable. I think, you know, you get into the media and you're supposed to be, I guess, unbiased, or it's supposed to take the fan out of you. But when it gets down to that overtime, when it gets down to potentially losing the game on a 51-yard field goal, the fact that I'm sure you can relate with the University of Minnesota, the fact that you've been a fan since you were 5 years old makes it tough to not have that lump go up into your throat. And just the way that that whole game ended was very, very intense. Happy for the FCS, I guess, at this point that's how that went, because a lot of NDSU's national television appearances on ESPN are playoff games, and those playoff games are held in the Fargo Dome. And as we've discussed ad nauseum, those playoff games sort of shade towards butt kickings, and that this was not that. And I think that it's hard for national TV audiences that don't have a super vested interest in FCS football yet, or maybe they won't ever, but it's hard for them to watch a 41-10 game, or even a 38-17 game like we predicted. So to have this finish in front of a national audience, to have, you know, Mack Brown doing the game, to have a player playing his first, you know, game at a new position and making his first start, break up a pass to win the game, to have a senior bounce one outside and score on the opening play of overtime, the game had drama. And unlike last year's game against Montana, the Bison started out the season 1-0. So just really an ideal situation for the media end of things, for the fan end of things. Of course, yeah, there's a lot of stuff to clean up. I think the staff would have been happier with a cleaner game. I think the staff would have been happier with a 3-touchdown victory. But winning in college football is hard. NDSU's made it look easy for the last 5 years, but it is hard. And I just thought it was a lot of fun to watch.
All right, anything further, Ross, before we wrap things up for this episode?
No, just like to thank Rocky one last time and pay attention for... I'm going to have a few things coming out this week. Ryan and I probably won't do another podcast because there is no football and no men's basketball to really preview this week. So sorry that we kind of got your fix out of the way early on in the week, but hopefully I will provide you with some written content to indulge in later on as this week goes by.
And if you enjoy what Ross was talking about the past 30 minutes here on the podcast, I can tell you that you could have basically heard everything that Ross talked about earlier today if you were a BisonReport.com member. It's $5 a month, folks. It's a cup of coffee. It's whatever you – it's a gallon of milk. I mean, it's very affordable for everyone. So If you want to support the podcast, we encourage you guys to subscribe to thebisonreport.com. Again, just $5 a month. If you want to follow us on Twitter, follow us at Ross Uglem, RossUglem, and me at Ryan Burns, MN. So the only thing, other thing that I want to talk about is if you guys can rate and review the podcast so other NDSU fans can find us, it actually does go a long way. So for Ross, for myself, we thank you guys for listening, and go Bison.